How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It is Easter, and if you think we're taking Easter off, well, you're wrong. I don't know if anyone's listening to this show on Easter, but doesn't matter. We're doing the show anyway. Tons of news to talk about. It is a huge week coming up. This coming Saturday night, it is the biggest UFC in the history of the company in terms of live attendance and gate. We'll find out about the buy rate. I don't expect it to beat the 1.7 million buys that Brock Lesnar did at UFC 100 for that big event. But 55,000 people will be in the building live in Toronto. They've already done an $11 million gate, over double the record attendance, over double the record gate. I'm going to be there live this weekend, so we'll talk about it next week here on the program. It's going to be a big one. So that's coming up this coming Friday night. We'll talk about that, plus all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll give you the status update on Scott Hall. Not looking good. We'll talk about the retirement, one of the biggest stars in MMA history, which also happens to be coming up this Friday night. We'll tell you who he's facing, why it's happening, what his thoughts are on his career in the last several years, and more. Talk about a Strikeforce name who is now signed to UFC. Yes, they are both owned by the same company, but guys have to be signed back and forth in order for them to do fights on either a Strikeforce or UFC event, so we'll tell you about that. Mike watched the Evolve pay-per-view. We'll give you a review of that. It was a special Tuesday night show on internet pay-per-view. I could tell you they were very pleased with how everything went down, so we'll get a review here from Mike on how all of the matches were. We'll talk about Raw, Impact, Tough Enough, Ultimate Fighter, which has dropped to a 0.9 rating. What does that mean? Why are people not watching this show? We'll have a discussion about that, plus a new NWA champion. The WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view, we'll talk about that. There is a draft coming up tomorrow, literally at the last minute. We'll talk about why that happened, some possible names jumping back and forth, and a lot more. We've got 2 hours of action here on the show. Be right back after the first break here to get it all underway. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here on Easter, it is in fact Easter Sunday, and we're talking about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts because we don't quit here on this program. And a lot to talk about. How could we not do a show the day before the WWE draft? Now, if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you probably recall that several months ago we were talking about how they were now doing a 3-hour block every Monday post-WrestleMania. In fact, the first night post-WrestleMania, it was a 4-hour block. They had the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony. They had 2 hours of Raw, and then they had an hour of Tough Enough. So 4 straight hours of WWE on USA Network. It has since been changed to 3 hours, since obviously there's not a Hall of Fame every week, although that would be quite the program. So what they're doing is they've got 2 hours of Raw, they've got 1 hour of Tough Enough. And so pretty much it was clear from the schedule, and later we were told this was the case, that the draft was not going to take place until after Tough Enough was over, which would be in June. Because, of course, you usually do a 3-hour Raw when you do a draft. Well, that was the plan, and then Edge got hurt, and everybody completely panicked. And it was announced, I believe, last week that next week is the draft. That's tomorrow. Now, because of this being a very last-minute deal, the WWE crew, both of the crews, are still overseas. And so the SmackDown crew in particular is flying back home, and they get no break. They're flying right back for television. So it sucks to be them. But the draft is tomorrow. I guess we'll see who goes where. A lot of talk about different guys, and let's start with a discussion on that. Mike, if you were to be given a number one draft pick, you could switch a guy, any guy, from one promotion to another, or one brand to another, who would it be and where would they go?
Well,
what a way to put you on the spot.
Probably if it was, well, if I guess it wouldn't be Triple H, because I would put Triple H on SmackDown, because I think that would be the most impactful thing you can do, since I doubt Triple H would be in the mix at all. It's just probably Randy Orton over to SmackDown, which kind of sucks for Randy Orton and everything, you know, and just the perception of SmackDown. But since the move to Sci-Fi, it's not like it's been doing awful or anything like that. But I think you need somebody who's going to be impactful, you know, as a good guy, I think, on that side. No offense to Christian or anything like that, but I see Del Rio winning the title. You know, Punk going over there and being a, you know, a face too would actually be great. But I think he's just too great in his role of being a, you know, just a slimy prick. And I think he's better served being on Raw anyway. So I think for me, Orton to SmackDown would probably be the most impactful move.
I'd put Orton on SmackDown just so I never have to see him wrestle John Cena again on Raw.
But see, here's the thing with the draft, too. I mean, I remember when this whole thing built up originally when they had, you know, the Bischoff and Heyman and everything else, of how big of a deal they made it. They gave stats to guys. They really tried to make it important. And we've gotten to the point now, and it's been this way for, you know, the last couple of years. The whole thing doesn't mean anything anyway. So when this draft actually happens, you're probably still going to see somehow Orton versus Cena down the line.
Well, that's true. Obviously, the departure of Edge means they've got to get a top babyface on SmackDown. So, most likely, Orton's the guy jumping ship. And
hopefully, he takes Sin Cara with him.
Yeah, I think Sin Cara obviously needs to be on the taped show. You know, he's doing all right on Raw, but he would be doing better on SmackDown. I mean, for example, the match with Primo a couple of weeks back where he went up to the top rope, and Primo sat down too early, and Sin Cara fell off the top rope, and he nonchalantly came back into the ring, and then he repeated the exact same spots, and then he pulled it off. If this had been on a taped show, you never would have known he'd fallen off the top rope. You never would have had that moment where he climbed back in the ring and repeated a spot. It would have been edited seamlessly, and that's what he needs right now, quite frankly. He can be a top star on SmackDown. He can be in the main event mix. He won't be messing up spots, and if he does, you just tape him again. I really think that that's the best place for him. The only name that we've heard, we've heard a couple of names, but the biggest would have been the idea, as of last week, of Alberto Del Rio getting drafted and ending up on Raw and doing a feud with John Cena. So that has been talked about quite a bit, and that would indicate that perhaps Alberto Del Rio wins the title at the pay-per-view and then takes that belt to Raw, and then the Raw champion potentially could get drafted to SmackDown, or you could even do the deal where for a short period of time that the title is on both brands, and then it ends up back on SmackDown.
What they really need to do now. I mean, there's no excuse now not to basically have a unified champion again. Go back to the big black belt that Brock Lesnar made famous, because they could stand to use whoever they have that belt on both brands. I mean, they really could use it, and they would have an excuse to do it.
Well, I mean, they could even, I mean, if you really want to be wacky, you know, put the, and you know, I hadn't thought about this until just now, but it makes more sense now. If you want to do the deal where the champions switch brands, you know, John Cena is not going to SmackDown. You know, they're going to keep him on Raw. I'd say with almost 90% certainty he's staying on Raw. Miz is not going as top babyface. You know, they may have done the switch, because R-Truth was originally going to be in the three-way, and they moved him out of it. Perhaps the idea is they're going to put the title on Morrison and move Morrison to SmackDown as one of your top babyfaces. And, you know, if they don't want to use him, he can lose a title to somebody or do something like that. But perhaps that would explain him ending up in that match. And then he ends up drafted to SmackDown, takes that title with him. Alberto ends up coming to Raw with that title. And then you've got the Alberto Del Rio versus Cena feud. They were going to keep the belt on Miz. That was the main reason that they put R-Truth in that match, was it was a guy for Miz to pin, and he wouldn't have to beat John Cena, and John Cena wouldn't have to beat The Miz. Well, Truth is no longer in that match, and now that they've moved the draft up, maybe the idea is not that they're going to keep the title on Miz. You know, maybe the idea was to keep it on him until the until June, but now that they've had to move the draft up, they've got to beat the belt off of him quicker. So, I guess we shall see what they're going to do, but I guess it's going to be interesting to a degree.
Yeah, possibly, maybe. Again, it's still what they do out of it, because they're going to make all these moves, and then usually also what's going to come after this is somewhat of a house cleaning, which, but I tell you, it's still, my gut said this originally when it came to R-Truth being in this match, it's just like, man, is he going to get cut after this? I mean, Vince McMahon hates smoking, they called him out for that. you know, they called him out for taking a break. I could just see him actually being gone somewhat after this, which, you know, I feel kind of bad saying that, but it wouldn't stun me because there are going to be guys that will be going after this in the next couple of weeks.
Given the 30-minute segment and beatdown of Morrison on Monday, I would be stunned if they released him.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, and there was a. I give them kudos because they're trying something different. They have different guys there. With that said, I mean, try to play to the guy's strengths. If you still want to do a 15-minute talk segment like Triple H and somebody else was still there who could carry that load for a while, that's cool. But I think there were some big limitations shown in that opening because you like the concept, you like R-Truth turning heel and the cigarette thing, or you actually absolutely hated it. And I didn't absolutely hate it, but it was close to it because it just drew everything out for so long. And I don't think it really, now that R-Truth is a bad guy, does that change his cachet amongst the WWE universe? That don't think so. And I don't think Morrison really did that much either.
I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to work out. But I will say one thing about the draft here very quickly before we move on from this topic. The draft of the last couple of years has been lame. You know, they've moved a couple of geeks, but no real shakeups. No real main eventers doing big dramatic moves that change the face of the other brand or anything like that. With that said, they're running out of top stars. You know, Undertaker's out of action for a long time. Hunter has just disappeared from television. Edge is retired. You know, it's the pickings are getting slim. So this may be the year where, you know, they've got to make some big changes. I mean, maybe it's not, but at some point, you reach the tipping point where you've got to do something. I don't know if that's this year or not, but at some point they're going to hit it.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, hope springs eternal every year. I mean, you know where they can go from this. It's usually always a bad time of year for them. They could turn things around and shake things up, and you can rely on your old wrestling background. Let's see if they do that or not. They usually don't.
We're going to do a break here in just a moment, but when we come back, we're going to talk the biggest UFC of all time. It is heading to Toronto, Ontario, Canada next Friday night. GSP and Jake Shields in the main event. That's coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts here on the gentle Easter holiday. We're here to talk about fighting now. Fighting here on Easter. UFC coming to Toronto this coming Saturday night. GSP and Jake Shields in the main event. Jake Shields, they've done a hell of a job building this guy up. You know who else has done a hell of a job? GSP. Talking about how this is the toughest fight of his career, how the odds are 4-1 against Shields, but he feels this is a trap. He's not going to fall into this trap. Jake Shields, he says, always finds a way to win. He's done a great job building this guy up as a challenger. And, you know, I go and, you know, I go to the chiropractor and I go out in the real world and people talk about UFC. Not really hardcore fans or anything like that. And I get a gauge of what your average fan is thinking when I go to, for example, the chiropractor. Or even when I go to my jiu-jitsu class, there are guys there that follow UFC, but they're not hardcore fans. They're not on the underground or on our website or anything like that, reading all of these threads and that sort of thing. So I gauge the average person when I talk to these people. And the average person is intrigued by Jake Shields. Clearly, they didn't see his first UFC fight, or a lot of his Strikeforce fights, but they are intrigued. Can GSP beat this man? Is GSP going to win? You know, and I guess we'll see what this means for the buy rate. I mean, that's what you want to do. That's when they do those countdown specials, the idea is we're going to take a guy that people think has no chance to win, and we're going to try to convince you that he has a great chance to win. And they put up those polls during the show asking who you think is going to win, and usually they end up close to 50-50, which tells you what an awesome job they do promoting these fights and getting people to believe in the underdog. So, Mike, does Jake Shields have any chance here?
Oh, yeah, he absolutely has a chance. You know, I don't think as good of a chance as they do make out to be on those countdown shows, which have been absolutely fantastic. You know, you get the one-liners like, you know, calling Shields the grappler's equivalent of a knockout punch and, you know, showing his cross training across gyms in California and everything. I mean, they've done a great job with that, and he does have a chance. It's still when they show GSP and you've seen him train and you've watched his fights. It's just he is incredible, and I know he's been saddled, and deservedly so, for the boring wrestling takedown style. But it's like, even though they're talking about, you know, Shields' improved stand up and the way he's, you know, as good as he is on the ground, he's going to be tough for GSP. Yeah, you forget about the fact that GSP, because he doesn't show it that much, is, you know, still incredibly dangerous with his fists. And I think for as good as Shields' jiu-jitsu is, I just think GSP is a little bit better. And again, GSP's in that category now. Somebody's got to do it before I'm going to believe he's going to lose.
I just remember the Jake Shields-Dan Henderson fight, where Dan Henderson just beat the crap out of him for a full round, nearly finished him, and then he got really, really tired, and Shields just owned him from that point forward. But in five rounds, Shields was unable to submit Dan Henderson, and I know George St. Pierre is very concerned about the jiu-jitsu, or that's at least the story that he's telling. But I mean, I don't think George St. Pierre is going to gas out like Dan Henderson. And an in-shape George St. Pierre, even if Shields keeps the fight on the ground, I don't see Jake Shields submitting him. And I don't see Jake Shields keeping him down and St. Pierre being unable to stand back up again. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe this will be five rounds that are boring. Maybe it'll be five rounds that's exciting. Maybe St. Pierre will knock him out, and maybe Shields will submit him. I don't know. But, you know, I think that I certainly would not put money on Jake Shields in this fight.
No, I think, honestly, I think you'd be more apt to see if Shields is going to win with a knockout. I think he's going to have to just catch GSP. I really do. And obviously, you know, St. Pierre could knock him out too, but I just don't think he's going to be, I think he's just going to be too cautious for that and not let that happen. But, I mean, you know, Shields could actually put one on GSP. It's just, I can see that happening more than GSP allowing Shields to catch him in anything on the ground, even if the Shields is the aggressor that puts him down first.
What's interesting about this show also is there are, I believe, eight fights that just happen to be American versus Canadian.
We've got
St. Pierre versus Jake Shields. We've got Mark Bocek and Ben Henderson. We've got Nate Diaz and Rory McDonald. Sean Pearson and Jake Ellenberger, Claude Patrick and Daniel Roberts, Ivan Menjivar and Charlie Valencia, Jason McDonald and Ryan Jensen, John McDessie and Kyle Watson, and Eve Jabin. Eve, I hate pronouncing names. Jabuin, forgive me, everybody. Eves against Pablo Garza. Every prelim fight is airing on Facebook, and every single one of them just happens to be Canada versus the U.S.
That was a good concept for The Ultimate Fighter when they did it, what was it, season three or whatever it was?
Nine fights are Canada versus the U.S. And there is a tenth fight. Jose Aldo against Mark Hominick is Canada versus Brazil. So, suffice to say, there are 10 fights on this show where one of the competitors is a hometown boy in a building with 55,000 Canadians in it. This is going to be outrageous.
This is an epically, this is the big event, which WWF ran in Toronto however many years ago. 12 fights. There's 12 fights, including Randy Couture's retirement fight.
Yes. Randy Couture and Lyoto Machida are fighting in Randy's final ever fight. And one quick thing before we get into this fight. For those of you that saw the last Strikeforce event, Jake Shields got in the ring and was booed unmercifully. Jake Shields was a Strikeforce, you know, he was in Strikeforce for a long time before he jumped to UFC. He was a local guy. He was a fellow Californian at that last show. He was booed out of the building because he's going to be facing George St. Pierre. This was in a small building in America where Shields was the local guy. Jake Shields in Canada going up against GSP. I wonder if you can factor that into your odds. The reaction that he's going to get from these people. Is that going to throw him completely off of his game?
I Well, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to, if it doesn't throw him off his game, it's just, you can't act like you don't hear it. And, you know, I know you're not a boxing fan. Ask your dad, though, about Greg Haugen going into Azteca Stadium in front of 110,000 people to face Julio Cesar Chavez. It's going to be kind of like that. And it's just going to be brutal, and it's going to be, how do you block out 55,000 fans when you appear in front of them for the first time? I can understand how you can do it over time, but this is just going to be absolutely overwhelming, absolutely huge. And you know what, Shields may be that comfortable and that relaxed where he can use that to his advantage and somehow turn it around on GSP and having all the pressure on him. It's just, that's got to be a hell of a thing. I mean, it's when 55,000 people want to see you get your head knocked off and are telling you as such, it's a big deal.
I don't want to say that I do better in the fight than Jake Shields, but I will say that if I were Jake Shields, or if I were in that fight, and it was me versus GSP and 55,000 people were booing me, it wouldn't bother me one bit, and I'll tell you why. Because I understand my role. I was a pro wrestler for a long time, and granted, I never fought in front of 55,000 people, but if your role is to be booed, then I don't, you know, it should not throw you off your game at all. And for, well, for a lot of fighters, it's not going to affect them. But there are fighters, and I don't know if Jake Shields is one of them. I actually don't think that he is. But there are fighters that they are genuinely offended if they train in a camp for 12 weeks and they work really hard and they say all the professional things in their interviews, and then these people have the temerity to boo them. You know what I mean? It really offends them and makes them upset.
Pure sportsman.
I just find that to be just outrageous. I mean, you know, I can understand if you go into neutral territory and people boo you and you don't understand why. You know, maybe that would throw you off your game a little bit. But I mean, seriously, if you're an American going in front of 55,000 Canadians and you're facing a Canadian hero, why in God's name would you be offended if people booed you? You should embrace that. That's role.
People are just sensitive sometimes, too, and it's, you know, you question how much sports they've played or something like that, too, because it's like, haven't you had to go into enemy territory at, you know, at some time and actually have to face some of that? And, you know, Shields being a part of that camp, too. I mean, if there was going to be any camp who had no problem being the heels, I mean, you know, the Strike Force beatdown, a mayhem, and I mean, from everything down the line, I think he's going to be just fine. It's just still going to be, it's not that he would be intimidated, but it's an intimidating situation, too. It's just the feeling of going in front of that many people. It's, you know, that's, who knows how that's going to play psychologically on. Even if you are comfortable with being the heel, I mean, this isn't going in front of 15,000 people, which is a lot of people. You know, making a lot of noise in these new arenas. I mean, it's still, this is first for everybody. It's a first for everybody involved.
Well, not Lyoto, actually.
Well, that's true, but he was, you know, the only guy smacked with Inoki fighting spirit, so he's different.
That's true. He's facing Randy Couture in Randy's final ever fight, he says. He'll probably fight again, I'm sure. But
now, can you imagine this? If Wanderlei Silva had been scheduled to face Couture, he'd be crapping his pants right now, finding that this was his retirement fight, because I think Machida is going to get booed heavily, too, just because this is Couture's last fight.
Yeah. I went to Cauliflower Alley last week. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But Terry Funk did a speech at the beginning, and he announced that he was retiring right now. And he expected to come out of retirement after the ceremony was over, but for now he was going into retirement again. I think about that with Randy. Yes, I realize that he's wrapped up his career, everything's good. But, you know, he I don't think he was really planning on coming back for another fight, but he was intrigued by Lyoto, and it was a challenge, and he wanted to challenge himself. And that's why he took on this fight, and he's saying it's going to be his final one. And he said he doesn't care if he wins, loses, or draws, as long as he puts on a good performance. And that opens the door for several questions, and we'll talk about this after the break. Number one, what if he does not do well? And number two, what happens when the next guy comes along and he decides that'd be a good challenge? Let's talk about this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and MMA, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. Tons and tons of stuff up there. We've got TV reports, we've got the latest news, and we've got radio shows. If you have a long commute, if you get bored in your cubicle at work, and we got a lot of people that are bored in their cubicle at work, and they pass their time by listening to our shows, this is the website for you. There is a subscription area. It's only $10.99 per month. So for those of you that are spending your money on porn, significantly cheaper. $10.99 per month, and for that fee, you get full access to everything. We do between 15 and 20 full-length radio shows every single week. And not only as a subscriber do you get every show we do, and at 15 to 20 a week, 7 days a week, there are days where I personally have done three shows in a single day. All of those are available to you when you subscribe. Plus, if you subscribe, let's say today, Easter, it is as if you subscribed in 2005, because every single show we have ever done is available in our archives for subscribers right now. You don't have to pay extra. There's no extra fee. You pay $10.99, and for 30 days, you have full access to everything. If you want to go back and listen to some of the shows that we did in 2005, 2006, if you remember big moments in wrestling, let's say there was a WrestleMania, you want to hear our thoughts on the Donald Trump head-shaving WrestleMania with Vince McMahon, well, just go back into the archives and all the shows leading up to it and after it are there. Every single show we've ever done is available to you. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Want to thank long-time Observer Live listener Anthony, who always listens to this show, always sends us messages afterwards saying he enjoys the show. Anthony signed up to the members area for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and suffice to say, I think he may be the happiest man who's ever lived at this point. So a big shout out to Anthony. Anthony, you know who you are. Thanks very much for the support, and glad you're enjoying it. And everybody else, if you have not signed up yet, you are, in fact, missing out. So back to the news here. The Randy Couture retirement. You know how retirements go, Mike. Sky says he's done. But again, he said that he's coming back for this fight because Lyoto intrigues him. He sees it as a challenge, and he'll be happy whether he wins, loses, or draws as long as he has a good showing. So the question is, what happens if he has a bad showing and believes that he could have done better? Or what happens if win, lose, or draw in, I don't know, a year, Bones Jones is such that Randy decides, you know, this man's beaten everybody, but I think I've found a hole in his game. What happens, Mike?
It just shows that no matter how fans want to split sports, the professional wrestling, boxing, and MMA are all together because there's just another facet taken from boxing and pro wrestling of the man who never retires or doesn't know when to quit. And, you know, it's a little bit different with MMA because if he has a great showing here, loses, you know, but still has a showing where it's like, you know what, against the guy in Machida who's one of the top flight in the world at his weight, you know, if he comes back, I don't think it would be as big of a deal. And I don't think it's – I've always been a proponent of the UFC as they go along here of having – exhibitions, not old-timers matches, but, you know, because they own the legacy to everything now between Pride and Elite XC, with all this stuff and the fact that they're open to doing jiu-jitsu exhibitions and things like that on shows and on fan weekends and things like that, why not, actually? I think there is a place, if he wanted to come back and have a fight, I think it's a good idea. I mean, it's like the Herschel Walker mentality. If they're not going out to embarrass themselves, and you think you can still get something out of him, and people still believe it, you know, and or will still buy it, it's still the fight game, and I think it's okay as long as it's not a Evander Holyfield situation where you're wondering if it's safe for that person to go out. And I think Couture, people have seen enough of him over time where, you know, they'd be confident in if he comes back out 2 years from now in a fight that people think is competitive and he thinks it can be competitive, that I think people would be okay with it.
Do you think that he's going to win?
No, I don't. But I think he has a good showing.
You know what's funny about Randy is I think there's only been one fight that Randy has gone in the underdog and lost. Every other fight where he goes in the underdog, he wins.
Hey, I made a lot of money off the Sylvia fight.
Yeah, and he is the underdog here. Now, with that said, at some point, Randy is going to be too old to hang at the top level. And I don't know when that, and it may be now, maybe it'll be next year, but, you know, you ask yourself the question, can Randy hang at an elite level at 48 years old? If the answer is yes, then you ask, all right, can Randy hang at the top level at 49? Maybe so. Then you ask, can he hang at the top level at 50? Eventually, you're going to hit the number where the answer is no. At 74 years old, Randy Couture can no longer hang at the top level. I don't know what that age is, but I will say that he is 3-0 in his last three fights. He beat Brandon Vera, although, quite frankly, that's not saying much these days. Brandon Vera, in some ways, beat himself. But not taking anything away from Randy in that fight. He beat Brandon Vera. His next fight was Mark Coleman, and quite frankly, I would have been stunned if he would have lost to Mark Coleman, even if he got old, because Mark Coleman was much older in a lot of different ways. And then his last fight was James Toney, a boxer. So really, you know, in his last three fights, with the exception of the Vera fight, which is questionable because I don't know what the heck's going on with Vera, but it's not really like he's been facing the elite fighters in the world. And you can even count Vera in that. I don't think Vera is an elite fighter at this point. So
no, and at the time, too, I mean, it was, even though it was a reminder that Vera wasn't at that level, I mean, it was still relatively impressive at the time, even though, obviously, Vera wasn't what a lot of people thought he would be.
No, and Vera proved that in subsequent fights as well.
Yeah.
So, really, the last fight he had against a top-level competitor, the last two, were the Lesnar fight in 2008, which he lost, and then the Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira fight in August of 2009, 2 years ago, which he also lost. So, I don't know what we're going to get in this particular fight right here. I mean, it could be a sad day for Randy Couture, and I wonder what he'll do in that situation. I wonder if he'll just retire into the sunset if he has a bad showing, or if a bad showing will convince him to try it one more time against somebody else.
Well, you know, if you go off of the history of these things, especially when it comes to wrestlers, too, I mean, there are still, I believe, men in their 40s that go into open wrestling competitions with guys in college and stuff like that, and it's, you know, look at Kurt Angle. Look at a lot of these guys. I mean, they're just so uber competitive where, and again, it's part boxing too. I mean, I'm sure Couture's been far better with his money than a lot of boxers in history that have come back for different reasons. But, you know, it's hard for that spark to go away. And again, if he feels like there's a chance, then he may actually do it. And you know, you're saying about when he hits that age, I think Danny Hodge is 79 years old. I still wouldn't bet against him.
Depends on who he's facing. If you were facing either of us, it would be a slaughter. He'd kill us.
Well, that's exactly. And most, like, you know, imagine him against like Shannon Rich or somebody at that level. I might take him.
You know, who I sat at the same table as at Cauliflower Alley.
Who?
Judo Gene LaBelle.
That had to be awesome.
I sat a long ways away from him.
The Big Book of Judo, I remember from the non-after magazines, that and the Illustrated History of Sex, you could always try to buy in one of those magazines. Those pages would be very close together for some reason.
I don't even want to ask what you meant by the pages very close together.
Well, I didn't do the advertising in those magazines. Those George Napolitano ones, the non-after ones.
He was there as well.
Really?
I think he thought I was Dave Meltzer's son. I never actually told him my name, and I think he figured out rather quickly I wasn't Dave's son, and he just moved on. So,
well,
it was
at
a
any
fun
point
time.
Did Dave, like, kind of put you in a headlock, and give you a noogie or something like that, too, that made him think that?
He does that non-physically regularly. Cauliflower Alley was a fun time. Let's talk about that here very quickly. It's a gathering of old wrestlers and some younger wrestlers as well. Amazing Kong was there, for example, and she got an award. They gave out a number of different awards to a number of people, including the Honky Tonk Man, who gave a great speech, and then he said, "Hit my music," and they played Honky's song, and he sang his song, And for those of you that haven't seen Honky on the independent scene, and if you haven't, clearly you've not been on the independent scene much because he's everywhere. You know, he's going to do 60 dates this year, which is probably that's probably more than most of the guys in TNA, quite frankly, are doing for live dates. But, you know, he goes out there on the independent shows and he sings a song. And then he does a match, a very safe match with a guy. And, you know, old school. Fans enjoy it. Hits the shake, rattle, and roll neck breaker. Not even sure he takes a bump anymore doing it, but they do. Gets the pin. And then he says, play my music. And he sings a song. And everybody claps and cheers and goes, yay. And then Honky gets done. And everybody cheers. And then Honky goes, you want to hear me sing my song one more time? And everyone says, yay! And he sings it a second time. He's awesome. He's like a Vegas act. So it's one thing when, you know, my father is a huge Honky Tonk Man fan. And my dad, I swear to God, my dad would rather go see the Honky Tonk Man than he would go see me. And quite frankly, you know, I don't know if I blame him or anything like that. But so, you know, it's one thing for my dad, for example, to see Honky come out and sing a song and do his dance and do a match and then sing his song two more times. But this was Honky singing his song in front of 380 retired wrestlers and some who are not retired. And it got over just as big. Part of it was because Tammy Sitch was there, who looks more like Sunny now than she has in like a decade. And when Honky sang his song, she got up and went up and quite frankly was somewhat spilling out of her dress, and she did her dance with Honky. And so anyway, when he was done, everybody stood up and gave him a standing ovation. It was awesome. So Cauliflower Alley was a lot of fun. Met a lot of great people, a lot of old friends. The highlight for me in some ways was when I saw Ricky Itake at Cauliflower Alley, old WWE enhancement talent, largely because the night before I had been watching Ricky Itake on Primetime Wrestling, and he had a match, him and Louis Spicoli, against the Brainbusters. And it was like the second week in a row that I'd seen a Ricky Itake squash on Primetime. And so I show up at Cauliflower Alley, and I swear to God, I just look up, and right across from me is Ricky Itake. And that was awesome. So anyway, we had a really good time. You need to go out to that one of these days, Mike.
I really, really want to. And at some point, I will, too. And yeah, you're saying about the Tammy Sitch. The picture's up on the front page of the website. She and Ken Patera, and she does actually look fantastic.
And I'll leave that one up there for a while for everybody. Kind of like the one I have of Christy Hemme that randomly gets put up there like every couple of months just to so everyone can kind of stare at her for 3 or 4 days.
I don't see any problem with that at all.
You should go to Cauliflower Alley next year.
Okay, fine. And it's almost like a challenge has been laid down. So, yes, okay, I will
go. That is a challenge. What are you, chicken?
That's... Now, where is it at? In Vegas?
It's always in Vegas, and they do it on a... you can go to CauliflowerAlleyClub.org, I think, or I don't remember. Just Google Cauliflower Alley, and the information will come up. But they do it... It's the banquet is on Wednesdays now, because, you know, April, a Wednesday in April, it's a cheap flight, and the rooms at the Gold Coast Hotel where it was hosted are very cheap. I think they were like $35 for a room, and just a lot of fun. So everybody Google Cauliflower Alley Club and head out there next year. There were more people here than ever before. So anyway, we're going to head to a break, come back and talk more pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to talk about, as always. For the break, we were talking about Cauliflower Alley, and while we were there, a young fella came up to us, and he introduced himself as the new Sheik. There is, in fact, a new Sheik out there, everybody. And, you know, I probably shouldn't kill his gimmick right here, so I won't say too much. But suffice to say, very friendly gentleman. To me and Dave only, of course. To everybody else, he was a bloodthirsty maniac.
Was he a saber-wielding maniac as well? Was he holding it between his teeth?
He was a madman, is what he was. But anyway, So we met the Sheik this past Wednesday, and he's going on his first tour of Japan coming up, and got a text from a buddy of mine earlier on yesterday evening, Saturday night, and I was alerted that the Sheik had just won the NWA World Heavyweight title from Colt Cabana. So there you go. The Sheik is the new NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Colt Cabana, of course, had beaten Adam Pearce, who we also saw at Cauliflower Alley. A lot of young guys there as well, mixed in with the older gentlemen. And, of course, Adam Pearce lost the title to Colt. This was only about 2 months ago, actually. And, unfortunately, a short-lived reign for Mr. Cabana. And the Sheik is the new champion. So, there you go. Have you watched a lot of the NWA Hollywood television, Mike, any at all?
I saw the first one, and that's it. Unfortunately, I just haven't had a chance to see it, although I've heard it's very good. I know Dave Logano's working on it, and I know the production is good and everything. It's supposedly a really good show. I just, unfortunately, haven't had a chance to see it.
There's a lot of television. I've seen a handful of episodes. You know, production values are what they are. And, you know, obviously the best workers for the most part are signed to the major companies. But to me, if a wrestling television show is logical and makes sense and everyone is solid, I enjoy it. And it's a fun show. So check out NWA Hollywood TV. It's on the internet. And we'll talk about that more in future weeks. Back in just a moment after the top of the hour break. Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare here at WrestlingObserver.com. I'd like to send a shout-out, Mike, by the way, to your co-host Adam Summers, who came through for me this week when I needed help with an audio show. He jumped right on it, so I really appreciate that. And we should get him on this show one of these days, actually, and the two of you can talk Japanese pro wrestling while I sit here and I don't know. I was going to say sit here and drool, but that sounded wrong.
Well, if you were actually talking about the Yumi Kurihara... I forget the other girl's name, who was a former model and who's all big and sexified. There's a match coming up there. You could actually drool over Japanese wrestling that way.
Big and sexified?
Well, I mean, when the Japanese press talks about her, the thing they always seem to mention is the 100-centimeter bust. They make sure to always point that out when talking about her. Her name is Yuzuki Ayakawa. If you want to go and Google that, I don't think you'll be upset about that deal at all.
Well, I might have to do that.
And Yumi Kurihara, who I'm just saying is a somewhat of a sex symbol there, but can actually wrestle as well and does so in Shimmer and was over here for the Shimmer shows and for the Ring of Honor shows that took place in
I was there in
Atlanta on WrestleMania weekend.
I was there. I met them.
What'd you think?
They were really nice. I remember
this
now.
Dave Prezak knows how to do these things.
Yeah, a bunch of us, I probably shouldn't mention everybody's name, but a bunch of us all I don't think the girls would care, a bunch of us all ate at, what the hell was the name of that place? Like TGI Fridays or something like that. And I showed them pictures of my cats, and they were smitten by my cats.
Look at you.
So now you know the end, Mike. I swear to God, though, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I didn't notice a 100-centimeter bust.
Well, I mean, that's not on Kurihara. She's got a fine bust, but I'm not talking about the other girl she'll be facing off here again soon.
I see. Okay, yeah. I met both of the girls that work Ring of Honor. They were very, very nice.
And very, very talented, too. And that's the thing, people, it's, you know...
We'll have to talk about this one after the break, but hold that thought. We'll be right back and talk about this and also my cats and how to pick up Japanese women's wrestlers. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk about how to pick up Japanese women's wrestlers at TGI Fridays in Atlanta, Georgia. And the secret is pictures of your cats.
That was a technique I never would have thought of.
Really?
Well, I just say that, you know, my wife has recently passed and show them pictures of Avery, who, with his long, flowing blonde, curly hair and bright blue eyes, he's like woman Velcro. They cannot stand to not be around him, which, you know, puts them around me, and that's always a good deal, except for when my wife finds out.
That's true. Well, I wasn't actually trying to pick them up. And my wife was there, so I couldn't have done that anyway. But anyway, the point is they really thought these cats were cute, and they were great wrestlers.
And that's the one thing with Japanese professional women's wrestling, even though it's, you know, it's not the All Japan days from years ago and everything. Compared to American wrestling, I mean, these are very talented girls, and I know Shimmer plays to somewhat of a smaller audience, but it's like, you know, there is good women's wrestling out there, and Awesome Kong has been a part of it, and you know, there's a lot of people. Cheerleader Melissa, who's gotten the Cauliflower Athletic or the Cauliflower Alley Club Future Star Award a couple years ago, too, and I know she makes it to a lot of those things. Incredibly talented and probably deserves her break, too, and it's just they really put in the effort, and it's always really actually entertaining wrestling.
All right, let's switch gears here. I want to talk about Zack Ryder. I don't know if you've been following this story, but Zack, better known by some as the woo-woo guy, has not been on WWE television, at least Raw or SmackDown, an awful lot of late. So he started an internet show on YouTube, and apparently the show's doing very well. In fact, if you look at the WWE Fan Nation page, the official WWE Facebook page, or YouTube page, I'm sorry, the official YouTube page of WWE, Zack's show gets more viewers every week than both Superstars and NXT put together. Now, a lot of people are big fans of Zack, and so somebody, in fact, I got several emails a couple days ago, people wanting me to get behind the Ryder Revolution, I believe they called it, and they wanted me to help them. They were bombarding WWE's Twitter and Facebook, they said, with, I guess, Zack attacks. So, I was thinking about this for a while, and I wrote something in the Daily Update Friday, and we can discuss this here. My advice, and this is nothing against Mr. Ryder, you know, people should stop, because this is not going to help Zack Ryder. You know, I realize that in any other form of entertainment, if you can get yourself over in a viral campaign, that would be good for your career. But it's not like that in WWE. WWE is not like any other business in the world. You know, a lot of the stories you hear about WWE, you hear about them, and you don't even think twice, because you've heard about this insanity for years now. All of these crazy things that Vince McMahon does, and all of these crazy things that the wrestlers have to do. And, you know, you mentioned that these wrestlers, you know, they're not considered employees. They're considered independent contractors. They have to pay for their own hotels. And, you know, you tell a normal person this and they're gobsmacked. You know, they just can't believe it. And again, this is a similar deal. If you told a normal person that a guy wants so badly to be used that he goes out of his way to show his passion for his craft by creating a video series on YouTube that explodes in popularity among the WWE fan base, you know, if you told a normal person that, they would think, oh, well, I'm sure he's going to get a big push on WWE television. Wrong! He very well could be fired as a result of this, because that's how WWE operates. Not like the real world. So again, my advice is, if you're a big fan of Zack Ryder, he's really in a lose-lose situation. You know, if you join in the Zack attack and bombard Facebook and Twitter with messages saying, push Zack Ryder, you know, he's doomed. But at the same time, if you do nothing, he's probably doomed as well. So, really, I don't know what to say about this whole thing. And what are your thoughts, Mike?
I think the biggest star that's going to come out of these things is not Long Island Ice Z, but maybe Scott Stanford. I think seems to be getting the most cachet out of this whole deal. And, you know, the thing is, even if they do give him a chance, and I know Triple H, I think, made the crack during WrestleMania week of, like, you know, is it four or five people want to see Zack Ryder? And Ryder points this out on the broadcast, you know, that he does. I mean, so they give him the chance. They're going to want him to do the stuff they have written for him anyway. So it's like, this is not going to work. It's good for him, I guess, to do something. I mean, he's done the thing with the basketball, like a PSA announcement of, You know, the WWE dropping the ball on him and stuff like that. And he pointed out the, you know, made light of the sign being taken away from the fan in England. They said they were confiscating Zack Ryder's signs.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me stop you right there. Think about that, everybody. You're trying to get Zack Ryder back on television by bombarding the WWE's Twitter and Facebook pages with Zack attack messages. And meanwhile, fans that just all they did was bring Zack Ryder signs to television tapings, and those signs were confiscated by WWE. What does that tell you?
Well, and it's nothing new. But so people should not be surprised when this whole thing, and you know, doesn't turn out. Because when else has it? I mean, you know, Loki and Matt Hardy for a spell there, and Bryan Danielson to, you know, it's they have in their mind what Zack Ryder is, and you know, they probably should have him on TV. They should be giving him more of a chance. He should be getting on TV, getting beat, because I don't think he's, you know, again, that's what. Do I see Zack Ryder as a world heavyweight champion? No, and I don't think anybody else does. Should he be on TV at least? Probably. But, you know, it's they're going to do what they're going to do, and it's not going to matter what anybody says about Zack Ryder. It's just they're going to dismiss it because he's Zack Ryder. Unfortunately for him, and I know Curt Hawkins, I think, is Curt Hawkins or, oh, God, or Trent Burton. I think it's Curt Hawkins is actually doing one of his own now, too, where it's like, okay, again, I don't think anything is going to come from this.
Did you call him Trent Burnetta?
Or Trent Beretta.
May as well be Trent Burnetta, quite frankly. When does this change, Mike? I mean, when do they lose that one guy where all of a sudden, okay, you know, we don't really want to push Zack Ryder, but my God, we've got no one left. We've got to start pushing Zack Ryder.
It's not that they even have to start pushing Zack Ryder. If they have him on TV and getting beat,
no, but that is
not the guy.
Yeah, but hold on. My question is, when does that time come? I mean, do you feel that with Edge gone, we are getting close to the time where they finally lose one too many guys, and all of a sudden they have to actually push Zack Ryder?
It will not happen.
Really? You see, I had this argument with Dave as well, and I feel. At some point, you hit that tipping point where you don't have a choice. Like, they've always, you know, we've always talked about how you've got to create new stars and that sort of thing. But even when we're talking about that in the past, it was still like, you know, you still had Jericho there, and you still had Shawn Michaels, and you still had The Undertaker, and you still had all these old guys they could keep going back to. Well, guess what? There is no Jericho right now. There's no Edge. There's no Hunter. There's no Undertaker. There's no Shawn Michaels. I mean, to me, it seems like, okay, you know, at some point, all of these guys you relied on are going to be gone. And then you have to push somebody new. When does that time come?
Well, I think you need to somewhat take care of Zack Ryder. Have him on TV, let him sell T-shirts for you, let him be a personality, let his fan base buy into him, even if you beat him every week. I mean, but at the same time, you're exactly right. But the people they should be protecting right now and building up right now are your Dolph Ziggler's, John Morrison's, Kofi Kingston's, Wade Barrett's. You know, Mac, there's people that I would have, you know, not McIntyre, Cody Rhodes' new character. People that I would have above Zack Ryder, which doesn't mean you should just crap all over Zack Ryder and dismiss him, but there are other people there where, you know, I'm sorry, he's like on the Department of Agriculture scale of, like, if they start donking off, you know, people in the United States, the president, and on down the line, I mean, he's really low on the list of what would have to happen to be pushed as a main guy on WWE TV. I mean, really? I mean, the character's not that good. I mean, you could have him in more of a role, and they probably should, but, I mean, for what they're doing with Zack Ryder, I mean, there should be more outrage over what they did with Dolph Ziggler for the skills he has, for God's sakes.
I was actually going to talk about that. You mentioned two names, Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston. I'm going to talk about these two after the break. Dolph Ziggler is now just a guy. They cut all his hair off, and he's a brown-haired guy with short hair. And Kofi Kingston is just, I don't know what's happened to Kofi. We're going to talk about this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking WWE, TNA, UFC, Strikeforce. This goes on and on. Before the break, Mike had mentioned two names of guys. Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston, both I wanted to briefly mention here. Kofi is like just, I don't know what's happened to Kofi. Losing one match after the other. And he was a guy who, you know, when he was doing that chase for the Intercontinental Championship, I mean, people on the SmackDown fans really wanted to see him win the title and become the next big thing, at least on SmackDown. And he won the title, and it's probably a week too late. And then he lost the belt, and now he keeps losing. I don't know what's happened with poor Kofi. And then Dolph, you know, he at least had a unique look. He had the long bleached blonde hair. And on Raw Monday, he comes out. They've cut off all of his hair. He's got a normal short brown haircut. He looks like Ted Jr. He looks like half the ROH roster.
Evan Bourne. They always talk about the generic blonde-haired, long-haired dude. Now they have the generic brown-haired, short-haired dude.
Yeah, this to me was a mistake.
I know. Obviously, you didn't want him beat, so I guess there was some of the thought going into him not being in the mix on Monday, especially if they wanted to take something out on Morrison. I mean, I don't know. I just what they've done with Dolph Ziggler hasn't made any sense. I mean, he's actually outshined Vicky Guerrero to a point. I know she's been really good for him, but it's like, if you're going to change him and have him be more serious and have him strike out on his own, there would have been other ways to do it other than hitting the reboot button on him and cutting his hair off. And I don't see how that worked. I don't see what that was supposed to do. I just don't understand it. I really don't.
He looks so normal. It reminds me of, we could talk about Tough Enough here, but I remember watching Tough Enough the other night, and you know, there's some geeks on that show. That's part of the charm of the show. They're a bunch of dorks. Steve Austin yells at them. You know, most of them have absolutely no hope. And then there's the one guy, Luke. Is that his name, Luke?
The skid marks?
No, the guy that's actually doing really well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is Luke, yeah.
Yeah, Luke. This guy named Luke.
Stole that spot.
What was that?
Wasn't he the one that took it away from Matt Cross?
Took it away from him.
Well, I mean, Matt Cross needed to show something to Trish Stratus, I think it was 2 weeks ago.
This is the guy that Austin was wrestling.
Can't remember.
Pretty sure it's Luke. Anyway, everyone knows who it is if they've been watching the show.
Not Rima.
He's by far the best guy on the show so far. He's in great shape. He ran they had a 3 mile run or something like that. He was the first guy done. He worked with Steve Austin. Steve chose him to work with. I think Steve really likes the guy. And you know, he's probably gonna end up winning the whole thing unless they do some sort of swerve. But again, I thought about this. I mentioned this a few days ago on one of our other shows, but at first it was like, oh, this guy's gonna win, obviously. And then I was just kinda like, you know, do I really wanna see another tall guy with a good body, with short brown hair that looks like he's done a little bit of modeling. Do I really want to see another one of those? I mean, there's a half a dozen of them on Raw and SmackDown right now. What is another one? What is another normal Dolph Ziggler going to do for me? What is another normal Cody Rhodes? What does that mean for the show? It means nothing. What can't we get? Why can't they do something, for example, with, I've said this a million times, Brodus Clay? Somebody different. Somebody who looks different and wrestles different and sticks out. You know, all of these generic carbon copy cookie cutter guys, none of them really stand out all that much. Isn't that the point of wrestling?
Well, and that's the whole problem with how they're developed in the farm system. I mean, it's, again, and this has been talked about, I mean, ad nauseum, dropping OVW, the problems they had with Jody Hamilton in Georgia. They're not using Rick Bassman of UPW. They are not using Les Thatcher when he had Heartland. Why you have all, you have Steve Kern, Dusty Rhodes, Ricky Steamboat. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of these guys who are great. And why do you not open up little pockets, little camps? Does it really cost that much money to do this in different parts of the country? Just five. Rotate them every 6 months to a new trainer, to new improv clubs, because I think they really need to do that with acting skills and really need to increase that and make that, you know, keep that rolling as part of their wrestling training. But these guys shouldn't be cookie cutter when you have Dusty Rhodes and all of these guys. you have to let them do more than just have this quick cookie cutter thing. And I mean, I guess people always, it comes to the, well, the money we've invested in them, they want to pull them up quick. And I just don't see how you spend all that money on somebody, quote unquote, and invest in them and then pull them up and then have them just basically flounder and then be done with them. I mean, Ted DiBiase was on the verge. I know a lot of people didn't believe him, but he was on the verge to at least doing something. Kofi Kingston, a couple times now, has been on the verge of doing something. And even if you don't think that they are, you know, Matt experts and they're not Shawn Michaels and they're not, you know, this person or that person, it's because it's a different era. They don't have the chance to do those things. But, you know, it's they can have this and they can start this up again. And that's part of, you know, when are they going to actually wake up and realize that they're losing guys? I mean, that's the whole problem with the farm system. And it's nice to hear that Gerald Briscoe is going to go out and recruit amateur wrestlers, but it's something they should have been doing continuously the whole time anyway.
It's pressing. I think about talent relations sometimes, and it's kind of like, you know, does John Laurinaitis sit there and look through all of his videotapes and just think to myself, you know, he needs another tall guy with short brown hair and good physique.
And the second generation guys, look how they've wasted it, especially unique looking guys like the Rotundo's kids, Husky Harris,
Husky.
And the other one. DiBiase and Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat. Can you imagine what happens? Ricky Steamboat Jr. and Tyler Black, I forget his name, Seth Rollins, are the FCW tag champions. You know, what are they going to be when they come up to the main roster? I mean, because I was stunned that Ted DiBiase is in the position he's in. I really am, especially the whole Marine thing, and I know that movie sucked. But, you know, the fact that, you know, slapping Orton and being on that little verge of he's Ted DiBiase and you screwed that one up. Trained by Harley Race, has been to Japan. You screwed that one up. I can't imagine what they're going to do with Ricky Steamboat. Were they going to make fun of the fact that making fun of, you know, Ricky being vanilla and they'll, you know, poke fun at him about that? It's just, I can't fathom what they're going to do. I can't even fathom what name they're going to give him. Look what they did with Michael McGillicuddy.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it's just, and these guys want to be involved in wrestling. They actually cared about it. They grew up with it. They wanted to be in it. And it's just, I don't understand exactly where they're trying to navigate their goal to, because they've really lost the plot on, you don't have to like to be called wrestling, but the simple promotions of things is what the UFC, it's not about the real fighting. I know investors are looking at the stock going, well, they can't compete with real fighting. No, they can't compete with their promotions of the real fighting, of building emotion and those sorts of, those things, simple things, I don't understand it. And I don't think, and obviously this is showing its head now, rearing its head with the fall of the stock price and everything else that people are looking to happen. And basically what WWE is saying too of, we want to stick within core entertainment and things like that. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's just, I don't understand where the ending point or where they're looking at this.
Tell us about the Evolve pay-per-view.
Well, the Evolve pay-per-view, completely different from what WWE's got going on. Basically, the whole thing with Evolve is it's run by Gabe Sapolsky, who runs Dragon Gate USA. He's also got Full Impact Pro. He has started up the World Wrestling Network, basically a alternative to Go Fight Live as far as airing internet pay-per-views, and they decided to show the very first Evolve show. It's Evolve number 7, but it's the first one that's been on iPay-per-view, and they had it on a Tuesday, and Evolve, wins and losses actually matter. They keep a running track of your records, which kind of is a little bit interesting in that there are guys who are still wrestling like they would usually wrestle, which kind of is something I think they may need to work on, because they're hitting big move after big move, and the whole thing with me is, you know, honestly, if it's about wins and losses, you should probably have some hesitation or show some question over whether you should try to hit that big impact move or try to be safe to get the pin, and they don't really do that, but it's a new concept that they're working out, and they actually had some good matches on here. Sammy Callahan, who I'm not a big fan of, but defeated Zack Sabre Jr. and was actually a really, really good match. Chuck Taylor and Akira Tozawa actually had a pretty damn great match as well. But at the end of the whole thing, Johnny Gargano ended up having a match against Chuck Taylor, which split up their tag team because they both finished the night with 5-2 overall Evolve records. So they had a playoff match, which I didn't really understand that either. If you're going to have more Evolve shows, why was it so necessary to have a playoff style of match? But they did it to, I guess, cause some dissension in their camp, or at least split them up. But you know, the mics weren't as good on the announcers as were on the Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view. The picture was crystal clear, though, and again, it was also $14.99. And really, with the announcers, which were Rob Naylor and Austin Aries for the first part and Jimmy Jacobs for the second part, it was good enough. And it's, again, I'm not sure how they did as far as buys go or anything like that, but it was a, it's a solid show. It's a cool concept. It's something different, and you know, it's just another option out there for people that want professional wrestling and a different type of professional wrestling. I think that's kind of cool, too, between all of these, you know, between Ring of Honor and their iPay-per-views, having one style and Dragon Gate and FIP, which is going to be more family-friendly, and Evolve, which is just, you know, more about trying to go more old school with wins and losses actually mattering and trying to compete for a title. There's options out there from WWE in their entertainment style if you want to go pursue them. You talked about NWA Hollywood earlier on, too. I mean, there are options. You just have to try to go out there and seek them.
Now, the as a sports fan, I mean, were you, I mean, are you intrigued by the point system?
Yeah.
The win-loss
system?
They're
not working with a ton of guys or anything like that, too, so you have to take it for what it's worth. But, you know, the fact, and again, WWE's lost this, too, and we can talk about it after the break, they're champions. I mean, they're competing for something. You want something. It's competition. You know, I don't think that's a bad thing.
All right, we'll talk about that a little more after the break. We got a lot of news to get into as well before we wrap it up today, including talking a little bit about the Ultimate Fighter and why nobody is watching the show this season. Talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 20 minutes here on this program. Airs every Sunday night here on the Sports Byline USA Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 125, live and streaming online. You can also get this show on your phone if you've got an iPhone, if you've got a, I believe, a BlackBerry, pretty much any of the major smartphones. You can get the TuneIn Radio app. It's 99 cents on the iPhone. I think on a couple of different phones, including the Android, it may be free. But again, the TuneIn Radio app, check it out. You can download it onto your phone, and at that point, you can type in Sports Byline USA, and you can stream this show on your phone. And thus, if you have a plug-in to listen to it over your stereo speakers in your car, you can listen to it in the car, for example, live every week, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. So check that out. And if you want more ways to listen to the show, you can always head up to WrestlingObserver.com at 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 Eastern every Sunday. We've not only got a live streaming link to the show, but we've got all of the details on all of the different ways to listen to the program. And again, as we mentioned last hour, sign up. We do 15 to 20 radio shows every week. We've actually increased the number of shows we're doing. If you sign up, you not only get all of the new shows, but you get every single show we've ever done. They're all in our archives. It's $10.99 a month. There are no extra fees. You pay your $10.99. You have full access for 30 days to every brand new show we do and every show we have done dating back to 2005. That's a lot of shows, Mike.
You did, like, 3 shows in one this week. You did one big, huge, epic show this week.
I did, because we were at Cauliflower Alley. I didn't have time to do my normal schedule. But, yeah, the last couple of, in fact, for the last few months now, there have been several days during the week where I end up doing 3 shows in one day. And let me tell you, I know it sounds like it's easy to just talk about wrestling for several hours a day, but harder than you'd think. Let's just put it that way. I used to laugh when you'd hear about you'd hear about models making all this money, and they tell you how hard modeling was, and you kind of laughed at the idea that really modeling. You know, I work with cranes all day, for example, or I carry refrigerators up flights of stairs. How could this modeling thing be hard? Then you do some of this stuff that one wouldn't think is very hard, and it's actually very draining. That's the best word to use: draining. At the end of the day of doing 3 shows, I'm just drained. But I do them, so they're available on the website. Check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. For the break, we were talking about Evolve, point systems, and more. And Mike, continue.
Well, what's Jake Shields fighting for, you know, coming up here against George St. Pierre?
Well, he's fighting for his championship.
Yep, fighting for a championship, a world championship. He's fighting to be recognized as the best in the world at what he does. He feels as though that he is, but there's another guy who's there that everybody's looking at. Really simple things. You know, again, when it comes to promotion, talking about, you know, sports tied together, all the UFC does, all boxing does at its best is do what pro wrestling does. It's talking guys, it's talking people, and from separating from their money of wanting to see something. They want to see, you know, two men battle for something. And, you know, for all the entertainment aspect that WWE can do as far as, you know, Alberto Del Rio, and then, you know, I don't know how much they've hired on a former soap opera writer, which may not mean anything just because writers don't last long there oftentimes when they have to work in that structure, but they want to go more entertainment-based, which, okay, fine, if you want to do that, number one, you know, fix the acting, but two, you still need to have to go after something. Until you take the ring ropes away and make it just like a black stage with a spotlight or something like that, I mean, they're competing for championships, and you know, it's okay to have goals. I mean, what else? Why else are you watching this? You know, because it's not the best sitcom. It's not the best drama. It's not the best documentary. It's not the best anything without the wrestling part of it and without the competition part of what we, you know, again, we talked about the list of words and you put it in the newsletter. It's mind-boggling. Why would you not want to be called athletes? I mean, that it's stuff like that that just boggles my mind, and I know this is just a Vince McMahon thing, but if they're not fighting for anything, then what are you watching for? You know, how are you getting anybody involved if nothing ever means anything? And I know that's been beaten to death, but it reared its head again with John Cena, and it's reared its head again with, you know, it just look at Christian and Alberto. It would mean a lot more if people actually thought they were doing something.
Is that one of the reasons nobody's watching Ultimate Fighter this season?
I mean, it's been a tired concept, and it's, you know, right off the bat, and it didn't do great off the bat, but when Brock Lesnar wasn't, for what anybody says about, you know, I mean, it's great that Brock has found a little more peace in his life, and he's being more comfortable with the media, and the fact he actually did the show is a big, with all of that said, what people want to see is a rowdy Brock, people want to see more rowdiness, and not necessarily even from the fighters either, because I think that's been a tired thing of, you know, drunk MMA guy, you know, peeing on other guy's bed or something like that happening. It's a concept that needs to be reworked. They do a great job with their countdown shows. As far as the looks of those, I think there's the ability to change the show and try to save it under its name, but they have to, I think, come up with a new concept because it's just, to me, it's tired. It needs to be retired for a while. And it worked for Tough Enough. You know, Tough Enough kind of jumped the shark in WWE and stay behind it. But, you know, look how it came back in a newer, fresher form and far, far better.
Maybe I'm just confusing the two shows right here. Maybe Ultimate Fighter needs Steve Austin cutting a promo on the geeks in the MMA house. How about that?
You should actually have him cut it on Brock first. Fire him up old, you know, K-Fabulous pro wrestling stuff. Get in his head and call him out for the fact he was booed at MSG.
No, call him out for the fact that...
losing to Goldberg.
Yeah, call him out for the fact that Brock was supposed to beat him in a King of the Ring match and Austin just walked out.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but you know what? I don't think Brock would respond by calling Steve Austin a damn wiener.
You know, I'm gonna watch all of these Ultimate Fighter shows, but I'm not gonna lie, I'm 2 weeks behind, and it's just not high on the priority list right now. And part of the problem is, again, you know, I've seen so many seasons of this show, and I watched the first couple episodes, and you know, Brock is just, you know, Brock is fine, and Dos Santos is fine, the fighters are fine. Like, nothing is sticking out. There's no rivalry here. There's no hatred between Brock and Dos Santos. And again, what are they fighting for? Well, what does a winning team get? Nothing. The winner gets a six-figure deal, and he gets to work on Facebook.com in prelims after his third or fourth fight, probably. Maybe he even makes it that far. I'm not feeling it. Like, I'm not feeling like, wow, you know, the winner is the next big thing in UFC. The winner is the next big star in Ultimate Fight. I don't feel that. You know, maybe it'll happen. but I'm just not feeling it. I'm not feeling the dynamic between Brock and Dos Santos. It's just, I feel like I've seen the show a million times at this point.
Well, and it's also the fact that, and granted, they need to continue to saturate the market. I mean, again, not in New York, have their problems in Australia, have their problems in Germany, not covered in mainstream sports pages every day. The fact that they still need to saturate as much as they possibly can. But for a fight fan, you know, you have access to so many ways to watch a lot of guys and to see them beforehand where, again, if they wanted to retire the concept until they built up some guys who maybe people knew from Bellator or something like that, where they changed the concept around somehow in some way, because it's just tired. And again, they see everybody on the final show. When they do the finals, everybody, you know, a lot of guys get a crack afterwards, at least on preliminaries, you know, no matter how they do on the show. So you're probably going to see him anyway. And again, unless there's a great Koscheck GSP dynamic, or there's a cast of characters like there was in like season one, I don't know. To me, they got to do something else. And to me, just taking a couple guys, take three or four young guys. You know, you could have did this with Phil Davis, John Jones, and say two other guys, you know, from back in the day, Maynard and Frankie. Follow just the four of them over the span of 12 weeks getting ready for their first big fights on a UFC show. Take two preliminary guys, maybe, and then take two guys in the mid-card and see how they perform and what you can get out of them. You know GSP is going to be a star when he talks on film. Maybe try to see if you can do that with a couple of guys in the lead-up to a fight, like a 24-7 or like these prime times, because I think it would have more impact, and aesthetically it looks far better, especially because, again, you know, I don't want to see tattooed-up dudes throwing up on each other and fighting and all that stuff, too, which pops the show for ratings, but it's not something I'm interested in. I think they just need to change the concept.
Well, actually, if they had a great rivalry in the house and two guys went at it and got broken up quickly or whatever, and Dana yelled at him and decided they could stay, and then it led to a fight, then that's something. But not even getting that of late. You know, random practical joke in the house. This guy doesn't really like this guy.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, where's that fool that tried to put the guy in the armbar in the cement and got power bombed? You know?
Well, and you think about it, too. I mean, there's been, like, there was Lieben and Bobby Southworth and Koscheck, you know, because that led to the Lieben-Koscheck fight, if I recall correctly, on that show. But after that, I mean, it's been about the trainers, which that's great when it comes to Koscheck and GSP, but that fight could have been built up on countdowns and things like that. Same thing with Rampage and Rashad. It obviously wouldn't have been as good, but you could have done it, you know, without the show, and you still probably would have gotten the same results.
Did you see the end of Tough Enough this week?
He called you a wiener, a damn wiener. He called you a damn wiener. Yes, I did.
You gotta fill me in on this, because my DVR died when Stacy Keibler showed up, which was a double whammy. Let me tell you, what happened?
Well, it was Rima, Michael, I think his name is, in skid marks again. The long haired guy, and obviously, Rima asked for one on one time as far as trying to train, because all of her moves still stink. So Austin, of course, saved her again, which, again, is not bad at all. I think is a smart move. It is a TV show, for God's sakes, people. And, you know, if you can get at least something out of her, that's actually good. But basically, you know, Michael and Skid Marks were getting into it, and basically Austin had them do a promo on each other to see who would want to stay. And basically, Skid Marks actually won. And actually, you know, the other guy talked about how he needs this for his family, and this is his last option, and his wife supports him, and the other guy actually called him out for it, and they actually had a little bit of a battle. So it was, you know, not the greatest pro wrestling promos in the world, but again, it was an interesting way to finish off the show, and it's the best part of that show. It's too bad it doesn't get a better rating.
Where did Wiener come in?
Well, it was because they were going after each other, and I think it was Skidmark saying, "Yeah, you know, I don't like the guy." Or Michael said, "I don't like the guy," you know, and Austin, you know, said, "You don't like him?" He's like, "Yeah, I think he's a wiener." And Austin just kind of looked at him, and, you know, he called Joe wiener, and the guy said, "A damn wiener." And Austin just kind of, in Austin speak, just said, "Well, he called you a damn wiener." And the battle commenced from there. So, again, not the greatest pro wrestling promos in the world, but, again, with the editing and because of Steve Austin, it was awesome.
Steve Austin is just... You know, I forgot about Steve. I won't lie. I didn't consider him like an active professional wrestler when I was talking on Thursday about... I thought Hulk Hogan on Impact was just the most awesome promo this week. I don't know what got into him, but I thought Hogan was just great on the show. Nonsensical, you know, but a great delivery. And him and Flair...
Oh, yeah.
Him and Flair and Rock have just been so awesome this year, and I was talking about how they're just the three best right now, and none of the young guys can even come close to hanging. And I totally forgot about Steve Austin, who, quite frankly, I think has blown all of them away. So we'll talk more about great promos and a little bit more coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. Back here for the final segment on the show, Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 o'clock Eastern, Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 125. And Mike Sempervivi, who has been the best promo thus far in 2011?
It's got to be Steve Austin. I mean, just because of the ending of that show, and it's a reminder again of there's another thing they screw up on. Dudes can't talk anymore. You know, you give them stuff, and you don't let them get comfortable talking in front of people, and all the names you just mentioned, except for The Rock, who was a freak, just an absolute, you know, freak of nature for the wrestling business. I mean, guys who just learned how to talk over time and got comfortable doing it, and Austin's just been absolutely, I think, fantastic. I mean, Rock's not that he hasn't been great, but, you know, I think of the fact that I think it hurt more than it actually helped. I know people say the buys he bought to WrestleMania and all that stuff, but I think Steve Austin's been the best for not only the wrestling business, but for the entertainment value he's brought as well.
Yeah, he's been pretty great, and tomorrow...
Because honestly, you know it. I mean, you don't have to even watch that show up until the end in a lot of ways.
No, of course not. Well, I will say this. You know, I didn't like the first episode of the show, but it's kind of starting to grow on me. But I will say that the best part of the first show was obviously Austin coming out and burying the geeks. And quite frankly, it would not have been nearly as entertaining if I didn't know how big a geek these people were from watching them earlier on in the show. So you really have to stomach through the first 45 minutes of the show. Even if you hate it, you got to watch the first 45 minutes because it really makes the final 15 minutes even better if you watch that first.
And there is a reality show thing of they do metaphorical things like the whole thing with the cheerleading and everything actually meant in the dogs. It actually had a meaning.
We're going to wrap it up for today, everybody, but tomorrow there is a brand new edition of Raw. They're heading towards the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view coming up in just a couple of... Actually, it's coming up next week, actually, the day after Toronto. So, man, it's packed next week. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about over the next several days at WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out for more. Thanks, of course, as always, Mike. Thanks, everybody at Sports Byline USA. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network.